Hello and welcome to the Stishy, the politics podcast from DC Thompson Media. My name is Paul Malik. I'm a Courier's political editor, and I am joined this week from reporters across Scotland, ready to delve into the political issues of the week. Joining us from Fife, we have the Courier and Evening Telegraph's schools and family team leader, Cheryl Peebles. Joining us all the way from the West Coast, we have Derek Healy, the Courier's political correspondent. And I'm happy to say, joining us from Perth, we have Rachel Amory, the Courier's political reporter, DC Thompson, I should say, political reporter. Good morning, three of you. How are we doing this fine Friday morning?
Hello.
Good morning, very well, thanks.
Hello.
So this week, it seems that Holyrood has got back into full swing, and by that I mean that there has been a lot to talk about. Education has been front and centre for most of the newspapers this week, including our own. Cheryl, there seems to be yet more fiascos over exam results, and it seems to be a case of deja vu when it comes to the way the pupils are being handled. Can you talk us through just what's happened this week and why so many people are upset?
Yeah, we had this last year, didn't we, with the exam results last year. This year, just to rewind back a little bit, as we all know, the exams were cancelled. That happened towards the end of last year. The former Education Secretary, John Swinney, first announced that National 5 exams wouldn't be held, and then hires and advanced hires were also cancelled. The reason for that was primarily equity, because some pupils had lost more time in school than others due to isolation and such like. So it was felt unfair to foist exams upon them. And instead, the decision was made that their grades would be based on teacher judgment, which would be gathered through coursework and also assessments. The SQA all along has stressed that these are assessments and not exams, but others, pupils themselves, parents, sort of other groups involved have said that they're exams in all but name. And certainly over the last few weeks, pupils have been sitting sometimes quite onerous sort of assessment timetables. Over the last week, we were awaiting the appeals process from the SQA. That was quite late. That was promised. That was supposed to come early in May. Instead, it came just at the very start of June. So Shirley Ann Somerville, the new Education Secretary, announced the appeals process. And immediately that has caused quite a stooshy. One of the problems being that if pupils appeal, their grades could be marked down as well as up. So that's causing massive concern among pupils and their parents. There's the worry that it might put people off appealing. Certainly the Children's Commissioner has already warned that might be the case, that people would be put off appealing for fear that they might be downgraded. So that's caused a massive stooshy. And then the following day, we had, first of all, the First Minister was voicing her confidence in the SQA. But then about 2 hours later, Ms Somerville then announced that the SQA and Education Scotland were to be reformed. This is coming ahead. We have the OECD report is due out towards the end of June as well, which has been looking at the whole education system, basically the whole curriculum, and also exams and how and if they should be conducted in future. So this announcement may be a bit of a sign as to what's to come when that report comes out. The government already knows what's in the report; it has the draft, but we're just waiting for that to be published.
And Derek, you kept an eye on First Minister's questions on Thursday. What did Ms Sturgeon actually say about the SQA? Because as far as she said, she had confidence in the body, but then they're going to reform it. That absolutely looks pretty silly, no?
Yeah, it was very, very strange. I mean, I must say, I think that's had all the signs of being an absolute horror show as soon as it was being announced on Wednesday, really. Particularly this element around kind of appeals possibly being downgraded. Opposition parties have said that leaves young people with a sort of perverse gamble over their future. And I think some have claimed that it's almost a tactic to reduce the number of appeals being made, although that's been, you know, strongly denied by the government. We saw both Nicola Sturgeon and the Education Secretary defending this by talking about how few appeals have been downgraded in previous years. We're talking, in many cases, fewer than 10 out of tens of thousands each year. But that's pretty much been immediately shot down by pupils and teachers alike. You know, they can't possibly know how many appeals are going to come through or what they're going to look like, given this is the first year pupils will be able to apply for them themselves. You know, also, if so few are being downgraded, then why bother at all? Particularly this year of all years, when so many young people have been affected by the pandemic, you know, whether that's working from home or having a loved one fall ill or even dying. But all of this has come on top of assessments that were brought in to replace exams, but as Cheryl said, have been described as exams in all but name, and assessment papers being shared online. And of course, the debacle we saw last year over pupils initially being marked down based on what school they attended, what those schools got in their previous grades. It's been a mess, really, and it was rounded off on Thursday by Nicola Sturgeon saying she does have full confidence in the SQA during FMQs, only for the Education Secretary a few hours later to announce it's going to be overhauled. You know, there was no signs during FMQs that this was coming. I don't think there's any suggestion that things might change, but as Cheryl says, I think it probably, you know, I think it ties into what we're going to see possibly in the OECD report. I think the tone of the questions, particularly from the Conservatives, was pretty damning, and I think they didn't have the support of the Greens, who they're obviously trying to work out a deal with at the moment, ahead of, you know, the education debate that was set to come later that day on Thursday. I mean, I know you covered that, Paul. What did you make of it?
It's strange, very odd. I think the fact that there didn't seem to be any indication that the calls for reform are going to be listened to. I thought it was going to be a typical head in the sand approach from the government, which the opposition parties had all sort of lined their speeches up to say that that's what was happening. Indeed, the Tories and Labour both said continually that, you know, it was either tinkering around the edges, or Michael Marra, I believe, said that it was a head in the sand approach to reform in the first case. Cheryl, the main issue that seems to be coming out of this is that the SQA needs to either be axed or scrapped or completely overhauled. What are teachers saying? What are teachers saying about it? They're the ones on the they're the ones that are marking the assessments. They're the ones that have had to you know, really change their entire professional approach over the last 18 months. What are their views? What's the feeling on the ground about the Scottish Qualifications Authority and Education Scotland? Are they happy with it? Are the politicians sort of chiming in with what they're saying, or are they as aggrieved as everyone else?
Well, certainly the EIS, which is the biggest teaching union in Scotland, has said that it has long wanted reform of the SQA. It believes that the SQA is too remote from classroom practice. So yeah, there's a great desire for something to be done, for the authority to be looked at. I think one of the sort of really big problems this year is that pupils have had basically about 4 months in class, and that's sort of maybe less for pupils that have had to isolate perhaps two or three times. And then they've come back, and there's been a period of remote learning, and they've come back sort of instantly into these assessments. We're hearing a lot of cases about pupils who were achieving A's now sort of dropping back to achieving C's. And another massive problem as well is that there was warnings about this for quite some time, that because pupils were sitting, I mean, they're using papers that have been sort of issued by the SQA, but they're sitting the assessments at different times. So there's been a problem that pupils have been sharing some of the material on social media, certainly sort of TikTok. There was papers being leaked on social media. I've heard from one parent this morning, actually, that their child has just had their maths assessment back. And some of the pupils in the class who had seen some of the papers in advance were achieving A's, and others who'd worked really hard and were expecting to get A's and instead got B's. So there's equity was the reason for the exams being cancelled in the first place. But equity is a massive problem here. We have this massive problem. So I think this is a fact that's just going to rumble on and on and on, isn't it, about the SQA, especially when we have the OECD report coming out later this month. So it's going to be really interesting to see what's in that.
And so, just so I'm clear, the pupils, they're not sitting exams, but they all have to sit the same paper under, you know, in a defined time period, all at the same time. I mean, that sounds like an exam to me.
No, exactly. I mean, schools are setting their own timetables. They're deciding when assessments are being held. I mean, a lot of the times they're being just held sort of in the time. Say, for example, it was a chemistry exam. It would be a chemistry assessment. Sorry, it would be held sort of during the time that the pupils might be in their chemistry class. They'll be using different papers issued from the SQA, but as I say, at their own times. And people have been cases, and we've seen the papers ourselves, where people have been sort of sharing photographs or whatever of the papers and or sharing information about what's in them. So some people may have sat them 2 weeks earlier than others. So those ones that are sitting them 2 weeks later have the benefit of this, of being able to find out little bits and pieces of what's ahead of them.
And how likely do you think that this means that there really will be a proper overhaul and reform of the way that children are assessed at school? Do you think this is the end of the traditional hour and a half exam where they have to sit and are, you know, stressed beyond belief to pass the paper? Or do you think the time is now correct to sort of change the way that we assess our children? Because the exams have existed in the same format for 50 years, 60 years, haven't they? And it's not a great measure, really, of attainment.
Exactly. Opinion, I think, is very, very divided about exams, but this is a debate that's gone on for years and years and years, isn't it? Are exams the fairest way? And I think this has been, what's happened over the last couple of years, this really has brought it to the fore and really, really made us think about how pupils are assessed. And obviously the way it's being done right now is certainly lacking, to say the very, very least. But yeah, I certainly think as the months go on this year, we're really going to see a massive debate about the future of exams and how pupils are graded in future.
And speaking of the toll that exams have on young people, it's not the only thing, believe it or not, that they have to be stressed about at the moment. Coronavirus is, as you all will know, had more than just a physical impact and an economical impact. It's had a very large detriment to the nation's mental health. Now, Rachel, you've been looking at some of the figures that were published this week on CAMHS, which is children's and young adolescents' mental health waiting times, and it's not a good picture, is it?
No, so these were released by Public Health Scotland, and the numbers are quite staggering. So even just in Grampian in the Highlands alone, there's over 1,300 children right now waiting for an appointment with a mental health specialist. And actually across the whole of Scotland, there's actually over 2,000 who've been waiting over a year to be seen. So that's a very long time just to wait for what could be a very important appointment for these young people. A number of ministers at Holyrood have obviously been calling for things to be done about this. So the Conservatives, for example, are calling for more of the health budget to be put on mental health instead so that this can be sorted. The Labour Party is sort of saying there needs to be an urgent action, they say, because it'll be a mental health crisis amongst young people. The numbers have certainly gone up as well in the past year. So, for example, in Grampian, there was 800 people on the waiting list in this March compared to just 650 last year. So you can see there's a big difference in the numbers there already. The Scottish Government does say that it's wanting to tackle these long waiting lists. It's apparently set aside £4.25 million to specifically address these CAMHS waiting lists, and £29 million overall to NHS boards across Scotland for this area. So they say that they are certainly pouring a lot of money into it, but I suppose it's the people will want to see these waiting lists coming down quite substantially.
And that impact on young people's mental health, Cheryl, is another issue that's been raised with you, hasn't it? The no detriment policy on exams.
Yes.
That's something that you've spoken to a few young political activists this week, haven't you, about how they feel ignored as a result of the fact that that's not going to be taken into consideration, which is beggars belief, really.
Yeah. We've heard from a couple of members of the Scottish Youth Parliament from our area, and they really feel, I mean, they've been involved in the process, they've been asked for their views, but they feel that these just haven't been that they haven't been heard. I mean, what one said, it's having young people in the room, but that doesn't count. You need to actually listen to what they've said and act on their voices. Another one said that they felt extremely let down. They've given their views, they say, but they just feel that they haven't been listened to. I mean, one of the key things that they wanted was this no detriment policy. They didn't want this risk that people who appealed after sort of losing so much class time would also face the risk of seeing grades pushed down even further. So yeah, there's outrage there among young people about the way they feel they've been treated this year. And yeah, I mean, it does have an impact on mental health, doesn't it? I mean, the stress of sitting an exam is bad enough, but to do that after having missed out on so much class time and having all these other things going on in their lives as well. Because I mean, everybody's felt the impact of the pandemic, haven't they? A little bit on their emotions and their mental health. So I mean, that must be really, really terrible. I think really, really difficult for young people to be in this position just now.
And again, Derek, we've talked a bit about deja vu and the topics that seem to just keep cropping up. Mental health, particularly in the Tayside area, is something really that has garnered a lot of attention and a lot of criticism, especially in the way it's been treated in our patch. And you've covered that quite a lot in the past, and things like the Strang review and the general suggestion that there again needs to be an overhaul of services. In Tayside, does it feel like the politicians are finally listening, or is it one of these things where it's just all sort of lip service?
I mean, I think it's difficult to say. I mean, I think, I don't know about yourself, but when I kind of moved to Dundee to become a reporter here, aside from the kind of standard, council budgets and what's coming to the city and what's going on, it was clear the kind of two big social ills in Tayside were drug deaths and mental health. One of the first big jobs I went into was to speak to the then head of policing in Tayside, who told me that the biggest pressure on his officers is being called out to mental health crises and trying to help people in those kind of situations. It seems to be an issue that's been going for the longest time, and I'm not sure how much further forward we are in tackling it. I mean, in terms of young people in their waiting times. I mean, those figures are absolutely shocking, but I don't think it could be particularly surprising. I mean, I think I did a story last year about NHS Tayside, which is obviously the neighbouring area, where 14 out of 17 general adult psychiatry roles at the board were unfilled. And there was a further two jobs in child and adolescent mental health that had been vacant since the year before. There was no sign of any of these getting filled. You've got to bear in mind Dundee has the highest suicide rate in Scotland. I think NHS Tayside at the time spoke about a kind of national shortage of people doing these very specialised jobs. And it would appear that's still the case nationwide. There's been proposals going back to that story of, the head of policing in Tayside talking about that pressure. That led to talk of a kind of mental health crisis centre being set up in Dundee, but years later we're still at the planning stage of that. I think at the moment there's been, I think that last month or month before there was a report came out about it, but even then there's no location being identified, there's no opening date being set up. So it's difficult to say how much movement there's been on it. I mean, I think these very worrying reports have been there right from the start, certainly, that I've been aware of, and they seem to be continuing.
So, although it does seem bleak sometimes, and it does seem that we report on mental health issues as if things are bad, there are organisations out there that can help. And if you do feel that you need to get in touch with them, do so, because they are trained professionals and they are very good.
Absolutely.
Helping people through things. Now, just to move on just to the end of the show, Rachel, you were covering something that was brought up from Monica Lennon, the MSP, on fast fashion. Can you explain what fast fashion is to those of us that might not know? I know, because I spent years working for a Swedish fast fashion retailer before I decided to become a journalist for my sins. But talk us through what fast fashion is and why it's not that great for the environment.
fast fashion, it's where high street and online brands, it'll be brands that we're all familiar with, things like Primark or Boohoo.com. They look at what's on the catwalks in London and Paris and elsewhere, and then they copy these looks using really cheap materials, and they produce these clothes en masse. So some of these shops will have new stock arriving every single day of the year. It's a lot of clothes that'll come through their doors. And because these clothes are so cheap to buy and they're often not made to last very long, people will tend to buy them, wear them once, and then they get thrown away. And that's obviously bad for a number of reasons. The mass production of these clothes using these synthetic materials, it's bad for the environment. The dyes in these clothes, they can pollute waterways and oceans as well. And if people are only wearing it once and throwing it away, that's more and more things going into landfill. And more being incinerated as well, which is bad for the environment. And aside from the environment as well, there's also the issue of these clothes are more likely to be made in sweatshop-style environments where conditions and wages are far below what they should be. So there is a number of issues with this, with fast fashion and our obsession with it. And Monica Lennon from the Scottish Labour Party, she raised this issue with the Scottish Government this week. She wants to see the government and everyone else as well on an individual level just doing a wee bit more to try and stop this and make people a bit more aware of the environmental and ethical impact of their shopping. So Michael Matheson, he's the Minister for Net Zero Energy and Transport. He responded to Monica Lennon's question. He says that the government is very much committed to this. He wants to bring forward a circular economy bill, which will promote using materials for as long as it possibly can, rather than just throwing it away. And he also says the government's working with SEPA and Zero Waste Scotland to promote secondhand shopping and responsible consumption. My chat with Monica Lennon earlier this week was actually quite well timed on this subject because we'll remember last weekend Boris Johnson and Carrie Simmons got married, and Carrie Simmons is reported to have worn a rented wedding dress. It's understood she paid just £45 to rent that dress, and it would have cost her over £2,500 to buy it new. And Monica Lennon was saying if more high profile people like Carrie Simmons do things like that in the public eye, hopefully it will encourage more and more people to buy things secondhand, especially if it is something that will only ever be worn once, like a wedding dress.
Are we sure she paid for it? I guess.
Well, she might very well have done, yes.
I mean, to be fair, they do have to pay for her to refurbish a flat, don't they? So they could do save a bit of money.
Exactly. But £45 to rent a dress, that still seems quite steep. No? Well, maybe it's just me. I get my dresses for free. I mean, that's all. It's all interesting. How likely is it the fact that the high street seems to be, you know, on its last legs and online retail seems to be increasing ever more that fast fashion will be able to be dealt with? I mean, if it's difficult enough to monitor how it is in the shops, how are you going to monitor it, you know, if it's just coming direct to the house? Is there any suggestion that the online is going to exacerbate the problem, Rachel?
There's sort of two ways to look at it with online. You're right, with lockdown and with the high street sort of really struggling at the moment, more people are turning to buying their clothes online. I myself, I've been doing that in the past year. And that will obviously have more people buying these really cheap clothes that are potentially bad for the environment. I mean, some of these clothes are, we are talking really, really low prices, maybe only a pound or two for some things. On the same side of it, though, there is also a lot of apps like Depop and Vinted. A lot of younger people are using these apps, and they are specifically designed to sell secondhand clothes. And a lot of people are very much wanting to buy from these apps instead. And so that's online and that's arriving at your doorstep, but it is secondhand. So that might be something that will be beneficial, perhaps, when it comes to things like fast fashion. I was speaking to one girl this week who regularly uses these apps, and she says that she loves it because she knows how much of an impact fast fashion can have on the environment, and she knows this is the better option.
And Derek, I know you just wear the finest tailored Italian suits, but do you think if it was made more aware of the issues with the environment and the issues with sort of exploitation of sweatshop workers, or even workers in factories where they claim not to be sweatshops but they're paid sort of abysmally, do you think if there was more of a campaign to make people aware that would make you think twice before picking up a £3 t-shirt on Boohoo or H&M or any of these other fine retailers?
I think there's probably a tipping point where there comes a point where it's got to be cheap and available for people. I mean, some people can't afford to go and buy nice clothes that are going to last quite a long time. So if there's an increase in this stuff being available, you know, some of those apps which we just mentioned, where people can get things and it's quite affordable, I think that would definitely help. I think there used to be a situation where kind of people who are looking for jobs and on benefits used to get kind of credits to go and go to some of the cheaper end stores to buy kind of clothes for interviews and things like that. So I'd be interested to know to what extent that's still going on, if this kind of thing has been looked at. I think, you know, raising awareness and some of these campaigns is definitely going to help and definitely make people think about it. I think if people can afford and if there's the availability, I think a lot of people would prefer not to. It's possible to do that.
And with that, that's all we have time for this week. Thank you very much for once again joining us. Thank you to Cheryl, Derek, and Rachel for joining me this week. Thanks to producers Chris and Morvin for recording the show and making me sound ever so slightly less tired. I've been Paul Malik. Thanks for listening to the Sushi. We'll see you next week. Bye.
The Stushy is the politics podcast from DC Thompson Media, bringing together political journalists and commentators from all over the country so that you can be better briefed. Teams at The Courier, The Press and Journal, The Evening Telegraph, Evening Express and The Sunday Post work hard day and night, online, in print and beyond, to bring you careful reporting and analysis designed to help you understand the implications of what happens in Holyrood, in Westminster and in our communities. So you don't miss an episode, follow The Stushy today on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you know folk like you who want to understand politics in Scotland a little better, suggest they tune into The Stushy or follow Stushy Scott on Twitter and Facebook. You can get a free month of unlimited access to The Courier or The Press and Journal too. Just go to thecourier.co.uk/subscribe or pressandjournal.co.uk/subscribe. Or follow the links in the episode notes to be better briefed. Check the episode notes for details and terms.